The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's 34 minutes past the hour. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Drew Mariani today, taking your calls at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Today is World Day Against Trafficking in Persons. It was set by the United Nations as July 30th, 7 years ago. So this is the seventh anniversary of this. The idea is to raise awareness of the devastating impact that human trafficking has on women, men, and children. Pope Francis has said that human trafficking is a crime against humanity because it is an unjustifiable violation of the victim's freedom and dignity, which are integral dimensions of the human person willed and created by God. Bishop Mario Dorsonville, Auxiliary Bishop of Washington and Chairman of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops Committee on Migration, issued the following statement yesterday for today's observance. Today, we take a moment to pray for all victims and survivors of human trafficking, and to reflect upon our responsibilities as individuals and as a church to make their well-being and protection a priority. We are renewing our call to educating about human trafficking and proclaiming the value of all human life. Pope Francis reminds us that it is the responsibility of all to denounce these injustices and to firmly oppose this shameful crime. We are called by our Holy Father to take a firm stance against this terrible violation of the dignity of the human person, and to do everything in our power to eradicate it. So let's take a moment to pray the Hail Mary on behalf of that intention. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. And that is it's a terrible, terrible crime that is still continuing to this day. I know that we often think of slavery and human trafficking being part of the past, but in some ways it's become industrialized in many parts of the world, and the United States is not immune to it. Joining us now is Dr. Rosa Patti. She's a professor of law at St. Thomas University School of Law in Miami, where she also co-directs the programs of Master of Laws and the Doctorate of the Science of Law in Intercultural Human Rights. She teaches international law, human rights law, human trafficking law, and comparative law. Inspired by her work against human trafficking since the early 1990s, Dr. Patti founded the John J. Brunetti Human Trafficking Academy in 2010, an institute she continues to direct. She served as a member of the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace at the Vatican. And Dr. Patti, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me with you, and I commend you on this wonderful initiative to raise awareness on human trafficking today on the World Day Against Human Trafficking, and also in a year which we commemorate the 20th anniversary of the U.S. federal law and also international law.
You know, Doctor, first off, I think that a lot of people think that human trafficking is something that, you know, we hear about it actually from time to time, but I think people see it as something that's, you know, far away from our daily lives, far away from our communities, especially in this country, and maybe is more or less a dying relic of the past, but that's not really the case, is it?
You are absolutely correct. There is a reason why human trafficking or trafficking in persons, as interchangeable terms that they are also called modern slavery or modern day slavery. So slavery of the past does have a lot of resemblances with modern day slavery, except for we have abolished slavery on the books as a matter of practice and of everyday life. Human trafficking, modern-day slavery, exists, and it exists in every part of the world and in every aspect of our life, including here in the United States, but also in each and every country, no matter how small or how large, throughout the world.
So let's talk about the United States. What forms does it take in the United States? What is it that where we find human trafficking taking place the most?
Generally speaking, we would probably categorize human trafficking into two major areas, if you will. One would be commercial sexual exploitation, and the other one is forced labor. So labor trafficking or sex trafficking, as we normally use them in our everyday parlance. And it is absolutely prevalent throughout the country and in every state of the U.S. and in every community in any of these forms, commercial sexual exploitation, whether it is in prostitution or even in pornography, and in forced labor, very much present in almost every industry. And in the United States, but also around the globe, in businesses and corporations that are U.S.-based, but in the world we live today, in a globalized world, having activity throughout the world, trafficking, forced labor particularly exists, and it's extremely prevalent in the supply chain.
So, and we're talking about the supply chain, especially as it relates to foreign supply chains, China, maybe, you know, other places in Asia, that sort of thing, where it's being located outside there, but perhaps even here in the United States, in supply chains here in the United States, right?
In the United States as well, in various industries, whether it is in agriculture or in manufacture or in tourism, one, if you would look beneath the surface, you would find modern slaves, so people exploited, trafficked from various parts of the world, or trafficked domestically, because they don't have to be, for a person to be considered a human trafficking victim, movement is not a necessary element. So while a lot of migrants are and end up or are victims of human trafficking, numerous U.S. citizens, permanent residents as well, end up being trafficked, whether it is in commercial sex or in forced labor. Yeah. So numerous court cases have actually showed us exactly that it has been in farms, it has been in various industries, in tourism areas, in construction, in manufacture. Companies are using slave labor in so many respects, and it does not mean that it is a matter of policy from the company. There are no companies that would necessarily want, per se, to use slave labor. But as you said, within the supply chain, the intermediaries, a middleman and so on might very well exploit people, recruit people that end up exploited in a particular industry.
We're speaking with Dr. Rosa Patti, who is the professor of law at St. Thomas University School of Law in Miami, taking your calls at 888-914-9149. And I have to say that I think that the first time that I was aware of human trafficking as an issue in the United States, this goes back quite a long time, it was the first time my eyes were open to this. And I remember watching a media report. I don't even remember which network it was that carried it. But it was about a tobacco farm, I believe in either North or South Carolina, and where they had infiltrated this tobacco farm, where they the people who were working on the farm were basically being paid in company scrip and weren't able to use their money anyplace else, and were told that they had run up a bunch of debt for different things that they had gotten and couldn't leave the farm until they had paid it off. And, of course, the longer the work, the more in debt they got. And they thought that they were basically unable to leave, that they would be breaking the law. And I remember when that was shown, and I don't remember when that was. I think it was either in the late 1970s or early 1980s, because, yes, I'm that old. I remember saying, that's slavery. And, of course, that was the point of the report, was that this is still going on. It's not called slavery, but it basically is the same type of thing. It's indentured servitude, and it is most of the time under the table. So, like you said, people, this was a farm that was supplying a tobacco firm, and the tobacco firm had no idea what was going on there. But then again, they weren't really paying much attention to it either, because it was
that's
a completely
correct.
Separate entity. And that's the way that this gets hidden, I think, from people. And until, I forget which news agency snuck in there and was able to do this, you know, undercover report, I don't think anybody had an idea that that was what was happening there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and you're referring to quite some time ago, and clearly that the reason why we even we have a Trafficking Victims Protection Act that came out in the year 2000 is exactly what you said, because servitude, indentured servitude, various forms that have morphed into modern forms of slavery were still in existence. And the exploiters were getting creative on how they were using people, how they were recruiting them, and how they were able to keep them vulnerable and under full control. So in a sense, while slavery has been abolished, human trafficking today is still the commodification of human beings, because the exploitation is such that it brings about a de facto, pretty much full control of a person or over another, just like, as we say, in the definition of slavery, is exercising any or all of the powers attached to the right of ownership. So we don't have a right of ownership over another person anymore, nowhere in any part of the world, not in
right.
this country, not anywhere. But as a matter of de facto status or condition, what is going on today, people are being held in slavery and servitude through force, fraud, and coercion. And that is what our law, the Trafficking Victims Protection Act, federal law, but nowadays also pretty much all states in our great republic have also set up anti-trafficking laws. And actually, internationally, too, nation states have come up with their own criminalizations of various acts that relate to trafficking, from recruitment, harbor, transport, transfer, and then with various means how they keep people under control, mostly force, fraud, coercion, abuse of power and abuse of a position of vulnerability. And it's not only by physical force that they keep people held up. As you're saying, in the case you're mentioning, they were held within the boundaries of a tobacco company or within fenced wires and asked to buy at the store and indebted to whoever had supposedly hired them and continuing this way in debt bondage forever. But nowadays there is also psychological coercion of the victims of human trafficking. So every day we come across cases in some part of the world where people are exploited and held physically coerced to stay at a certain place through fences or beatings or handcuffs and other mistreatments, but also psychologically by isolating them and by putting a lot of pressure and threats of force and coercion for harm, either harm to them or harm to their loved ones. So it's a major problem. And the way I mentioned the trafficking law, federal law in the United States, and also what is known as the Palermo Protocol in the international level, which is supplementing the United Nations Convention on Transnational Organized Crime, which kind of has created those umbrella international standards that nation states abide by and then try to implement domestically through their legislation. But as I am saying, we are talking about laws criminalizing certain activity. And I couldn't but listen to the entry, to the introduction of this section, and I was hearing you and also your colleague that introduced the topic as well. that it is for all of us to pay attention and to be able to do something. I would say that a criminal law approach is not the only way and the only approach to combat trafficking in human beings. And actually, I would even hold that it's not even the most effective way.
Interesting.
Because I would say that is very important. I am a law professor, so I appreciate the existence of the law and all the work that has gone into that. Trafficking is more than that. It's not a simple crime. Very much it is, really. I tell my students all the time, why don't we just call it a social phenomena, figuratively speaking, and then let us discuss where this leads us. And this goes to the important issues of what are the root causes. What is actually creating this readily available supply, this readily available vulnerability, if you will, that is making people susceptible to trafficking? And then how can we raise awareness, like the program like yours is doing, need to raise awareness so people know that it exists. And it does not just exist somewhere over there. A few years ago, we had in Florida, actually it ended up being a court case, a teacher that was exploiting a victim, a child actually, brought a child from the homeland, supposedly to take care of the child and to educate the child, and ended up exploiting this child in domestic servitude.
Yes.
For so many years. And she was a well-known professor and teacher, I should say, and respected around. So we need to raise awareness so people know that we all can be those good Samaritans that are able to spot the problem. Because this case was actually spotted by a neighbor that noticed a young girl taking a shower with a bucket in the backyard and saying, what is this child doing there? So it's a lot of other issues that we should address comprehensively. The demand side, for instance, there is a demand for commercial sex and for pornography. Otherwise, we wouldn't have sex trafficking.
Right.
And I think also we should change our everyday culture. So we should all have that predisposition to change our culture from an individualistic one into a culture of caring more about the other. And as your program started with the dignity of each and every person in the image of God, you were quoting Pope Francis and human trafficking as a crime against humanity. And indeed it is, even as a matter of law, it is, even in the statute of the International Criminal Court, but also in various court cases that have dealt with crimes internationally. We have had convictions that relate to enslavement as a crime against humanity. But Pope Francis also mentions that trafficking in human beings is an open wound on the body of the contemporary society. And I think this is really meaningful, and it urges us all to move and be able to do something. Talking about it, there is a very good document.
And Doctor, we are speaking with Dr. Rosa Patti. We're taking your calls at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. And I want to go back to, you're making a great point about it being a social phenomenon, rather, you know, not just a legal phenomenon, and that it is really about solidarity, right? It's part of that call between solidarity and subsidiarity, and understanding that we all have dignity as human persons and as a creation of God, and part of that I think is just being educated on the things that we're talking about right today. I mean, being educated in where all the nooks and crannies of this are and what the arguments are that we kind of have to work around. And you mentioned pornography in the commercial sex industry, and there is a strong current of thought, and we see it also in the, and I'm not saying it's the same thing, but just, you know, in terms of ideologically speaking, it's a little bit similar to the marijuana legalization argument. And again, like I say, I'm not saying that one is the other. It's just part of the same sort of libertarian sort of approach, saying, well, you know, these are adults. They're making free choices. You know, if they want to participate in this, it's really not your business, and that sort of thing. And as you were saying, sort of the individualistic, disconnected view of these things. But it, in the first place, it's not always their choice, and it is not always something that they control. They are, in some cases at least, being controlled by others and unable to make that choice for themselves. And that's the difference that makes it human trafficking.
And absolutely, you are correct. This goes to what I was saying earlier, that it is a commodification of human beings, stripping the person of agency and trumping on the dignity of each person. But you also make a good point for the distinction. Now, the people can see things differently, and of course, as a matter of law, there is a difference between prostitution and human trafficking. But I would have to agree. I'd like to mention here this professor, Catherine McKinnon, that always notes that prostitution is not work. And she goes into this absolutely detailed analysis of how it is that women are subjected to the cruelty of exploitation and prostitution. And many of them actually are commercially sex trafficked. So yep. They have no say. Many of them are children, very, very young age, sometimes at the age of 9, and they have been abroad. They have been given cases younger, and you can't say that the child of that age is making a choice for one way or another. It's a crime in the eye of the law, but it just morally doesn't fit in any way whatsoever. But sex trafficking is not the only one. Labor trafficking is also a major issue, and sometimes in many parts of the world, a forgotten issue. Talking about it, just this week at our John J. Brunetti Human Trafficking Academy, we are offering an intensive program on the state of labor trafficking domestically and abroad. And we are really dissecting the issues as a matter of law, as a matter of policy, as a matter of practice, but also in a very much interdisciplinary approach. How does, let's say, the fact that people are on the move impact them and increase their vulnerability to trafficking? How can age impact other vulnerabilities? So how does age, how does gender, how does race impact? And how do certain circumstances, like, let's say, the COVID-19 pandemic that we are going through, impact human trafficking as well? And it does. In so many respects, it does. It's making people more vulnerable. People are losing their jobs. They will be then easily susceptible to those that fraudulently will be promising them a job, a future, domestically and internationally too. These are the characteristics of human trafficking, of how they keep control of people. It's force, fraud, and coercion, pretty much. And the threats of serious harm to them or to people they know.
Yeah, and I would say that migration is a uniquely vulnerable action, right? Because so many of these...
Absolutely.
Yeah, people who get involved in... who are trying to migrate to improve their lives are exploited... sometimes horribly exploited because they just don't have the resources to do it in a safe manner. And I think that's something we especially have to look at. We've got about a minute left. I'm going to let you respond to that, Dr. Patti, but I do want to note that you can go to the John J. Brunetti Human Trafficking Academy by going to humantraffickingacademy.org. And Dr. Patti, I'll let you respond to that.
Thank you so very much, first of all, and I would look forward to as many people contacting us, engaging with us, to learn more about human trafficking, because of utmost importance is prevention of human trafficking. I come back as a law professor. In the eyes of the law, certain conduct is criminalized. And we investigate and prosecute and convict perpetrators and protect the victims, the survivors that we are able to identify. But this is a hidden crime. Statistics talk about millions, 40 million, you read somewhere, 25 million in labor. But it's not about numbers. That's a hidden crime. A multi-billion dollar industry, it's hidden. We are not able to, nor have we been able to, identify and rescue and reintegrate the victims. But what we can do and we should all do is work towards prevention.
To work towards prevention, you can find out more from Dr. Rosa Patti at humantraffickingacademy.org, St. Thomas University, the John J. Brunetti Human Trafficking Academy, humantraffickingacademy.org, and stay vigilant. I'm Ed Morrissey, filling in for Drew. We'll be right back.